And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, breaking news right now up on the screen. I'm watching it. CNN's got this. You may remember Senator Bob Menendez, the U.S. Senator from, Massachusetts, I believe? Yeah, Democrat. Just sentenced to 11 years in prison. Wow. Convicted of bribery and corruption. You remember, he's the one they found gold bricks in his house. He had taken cash and gifts from the Egyptian government while he was the, I think, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I mean, okay, so that one went to jail. Even his Democrat brethren couldn't cover up for him anymore at that point. Gold bricks in his closet. You know, everybody's got gold bricks in their closet.
And they were able from the Egyptian government.
Yeah, really. And they were actually able to trace those gold bricks, too, because they had stamps on them. And they came from nefarious backgrounds. Let's put it that way. All right, I am going to kick up a batch of what we like to call home fries. What is that? Well, that's when I take a look at what's going on in and around and where we live. Because like I keep saying to you, and I said in my monologue earlier, what happens in our own backyard, in our own state capitals, sometimes has more impact on how we live and work and do things on a day-to-day basis than what happens in D.C. That being said, I like to call it cooking up a batch of home fries. Oh, yeah. Cook them up. Just cook them up. All right. So, first of all, school choice very much, very, very, very much in the mix right now. Tennessee was called into a special legislative session for their state legislature, and they're in it right now. Just this morning, I got word that the Tennessee legislature, both the House and the Senate, gave what is known as a favorable report. That's when you take a bill through the committee process and you report the bill out for a floor vote potential with either a favorable report or an unfavorable report. Well, a favorable means it can go forward. Unfavorable means it was not passed out of committee. So it got a favorable report. School choice is looking like it's on track to become a thing. And don't forget, Alabama, we did this last year. I just right before we went on the show, I found that the state of Alabama now ranks as number 11 in the nation for what is known as the education freedom standings. ALEC, which is a conservative state legislature sort of organization, I think it's called the American Legislative Something Council. Anyway, the ALEC came out with this year's rankings of education freedom. Out of all the states, Alabama ranks number 11 because of what we passed last year with the CHOOSE Act. The CHOOSE Act, which basically just gives parents the rights to have access to the funds they've been paying in taxes to do what they think is best for their kids' education. You can, for the first 2 years, the CHOOSE Act allows you, for those with a lower income, to have access to literal cash accounts. Like the state will give you, I think it's up to $7,000 to go to private school or another public school or the expenses related thereto, or $4,000 for homeschool. I think I'm quoting that correctly. But the CHOOSE Act went into effect this month, and they had overwhelming amounts of signups. Like 2,500 people signed up for it on day one. Day one! So, yeah, you can type in, if you're in Alabama and you're a parent and you want to take advantage of, all you have to do is be a resident here, then you go to the CHOOSE Act online. There's a website for the State Department of Revenue. They'll square you away. All right. Just so you know, too, Tennessee, neck deep in it. Governor Bill Lee called for it, and he brought it up. And theirs is called the Education Freedom Act of 2025. And they're in the middle of their legislative session right now. And like I said, Tennessee lawmakers are working hard on it. I'm actually very hopeful. Corey DeAngelis, who has been on this show several times, Corey DeAngelis is a national figure. He calls himself a school choice evangelist. I mean, he's literally been one of those driving forces around the nation on the issue. Pointed out that President Donald Trump just put out a statement on his own Truth Social platform about this this morning, actually. No, yesterday afternoon, saying congratulations to Tennessee legislators who are working hard to pass school choice this week, which I totally support. Trump went on to say, we will very soon be sending education back to the states where it belongs. It is our goal to bring education in the United States to the highest level, one that it has never attained before, make America great again. Okay, if that happens, if Trump can truly say, no more U.S. Department of Education, no more centralized control, no more stupid crap like, oh, I don't know, we're trying to do away with Title IX and let transgenders be playing in sports. No more. Just send the money to the states and say, states, do the best you can with what you got. And then you're going to see Alabama start rising because they're not going to have all these stringers attached to it. No more stupid programs coming down from on high and centralized curriculum choices. You're going to see things happen more at a state level. And then it's all on us, by the way. If we fail, we fail on our own.
By the way, Republican lawmakers have introduced a nationwide school choice bill in Congress as of yesterday. Not sure who's sponsoring that bill, but
no kidding.
We'll see if that that comes up to
see if you can find out whether any of Alabama's delegation signed on to that. That'd be good. All right, right here in Alabama, we're going to be coming up in a minute with a phone call with our friend Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute. But 1819 News has a story. See, our state legislature goes in next week for what is known as the regular session. They meet every year, roughly at this time. It kind of flexes a little bit on the start date, but the reality is it's roughly this time, and they'll spend the next several months down in the state capitol at least 3 days a week doing committee work and passing bills on the state and House and Senate floors. The state House just came out with what they call their Alabama Values Legislative Agenda. Now, this is interesting. I don't argue with any of it. It's a package of what I would call more like principles. They didn't name a single bill. Okay, that's not an agenda. That's just like a set of things we care about. They said they care about prioritizing election integrity, about border security, about care for service members and veterans, about strengthening public education, about increasing pro-life causes, and advancing what they call common sense. And I look at that and think, that's wonderful, but what exactly does it mean? What are you going to do? Well, they say at the end of the session, they'll tell us what they did about those things. Okay, be guided by principle, but y'all, I want to know what you're going to do. Coming up next, we'll talk about that with Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on Hump Day, right here at the middle of the week. Listen, I'm doing a segment right now we like to call Home Fries. We say it facetiously, but what we're saying is sometimes what happens right here at home, in your state, in your locale, it can have more impact on your life than anything that comes out of D.C. Well, a lot of that, too, can come from your state legislatures. Somebody who knows it as well as anybody in the world, because she's been in the mix down there for quite a while, is our friend Stephanie Smith. She's the president of the Alabama Policy Institute, where I am proud to still be a distinguished fellow. And she's got her finger on the pulse of what's happening in our state capitol right now. Stephanie Smith, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And I'm actually, I didn't tell you this, but I'm actually at the state capitol right now.
I figured.
There's a little pre-gaming going on, and I don't mean in the fun way. So lots of meetings happening, lots of things, trying to get on agendas, trying to move some bills forward. So all that happens even before they get here.
Listen, I mean, I didn't say I was going to ask you. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Sure.
What about access to the governor's office? Because in the past, API, we used to have access to the governor's office, and I feel like that's waned in recent years because there's been a difficult time trying to get through to see Kay Ivey. Have you had any opportunity to meet with the governor's staff?
I have, yeah. Great. You know, we worked really closely with the governor's staff on our school choice bill on the CHOOSE Act last year, and we're working pretty closely with them on a few bills again this year. So that's been refreshing. And her staff, you know, they're really focused on the governor's long-term legacy, and some of our bills fit right into that. It's been good to work together with them more so than we have in the recent past.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Well, listen, right before you came on, right before the break, I brought up a story as part of the segment here from 1819 News. It came out yesterday. That the title, you probably saw it, the title of it is House GOP Caucus here in Alabama. The House GOP Caucus launches its Alabama Values Legislative Agenda for 2025. And I read the article, and while I don't disagree with anything they said, and I've often said that sometimes principle matters more than policy because principle guides policy, all they did was say, these are things we stand for. They didn't name a single bill. So what do you know about this? Where are they headed right now in the House? Do you know?
Yeah, they actually set up kind of a little, I don't know what they called it, but it was a committee, basically, that met in the off season to come up with agenda items. I know a few people who were on that committee, and the thought process, I think, was that they were going to do these overarching values and then only really push forward with bills that fit under one of those umbrellas. And so I was super interested to see, you know, what those topics were. They were pretty broad.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, you know, you can make an argument for some, you know, lots of different bills under the headings. But I really think from talking to some folks down here, they're going to, I think that their inclination is to take a cue from what's happening in D.C. I do think that they're more focused on crime and immigration than they have been in recent years.
Yeah.
Those things come up in almost every conversation. But they're also taking a cue from what's happening with DOGE and paying attention to how big our bureaucracy is, how much we're taxing, how much we're spending. And frankly, I mean, for you and me, you know, who have been talking about these things for decades, it's pretty refreshing to hear people asking the right questions.
Yeah, it is. It means that you feel like they're actually keyed in and paying attention. And I don't know if you heard my opening monologue. I know you're probably busy with meetings, but when the show started off today, I pointed out mm-hmm. that Republican supermajorities in Florida, Alabama, Tennessee are all considering things right now that they have the wind at their back on all of it. And they can, this is a year when they could get cultural issues, fiscal issues, beating back soft on crime issues, and do all the mm-hmm. things that they say they care about when they campaign. They could do it this year because the public sentiment is absolutely in their favor.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, especially in a state like Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, with the numbers so strong for President Trump, there's a pretty clear mandate nationwide, but it's even more clear in Alabama. And so that's what I've been talking to folks about. And even, you know, on some of the social issues, you know, Alabama was way out front on some of these gender issues.
Yep.
and got some pushback for it, frankly. And so now basically the rest of the world has come around to the Alabama value of, hey guys, maybe this isn't the best thing for adolescents, you know, to have sex change operations, et cetera. So, you know, some of the social issues are also coming around. And so it's been a nice sea change to see. But as you know, talk is cheap and the rubber hits the road starting next week.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what they actually accomplish. I'd like to see them pay closer scrutiny, to the budgets, and, you know, they've done a good job of putting money away, and not just spending it on, you know, nonsense for the most part. There's definitely some fluff in there, but they've done a good job of putting money away in these savings accounts. But we're still in a budget surplus, even with putting basically $4 billion away in one pot of money, you know, one pot or another. And, you know, to me, the time is ripe for making sure we're spending the money on the right things and then also considering a more broad tax cut.
Yeah, people don't realize, too often don't realize that Alabama is actually a very solvent state. We have a balanced budget requirement in our state constitution, and because of mm-hmm. things we've been able to do over the last decade, we actually have reserve accounts in both our education and general fund budgets right now that give
right.
us, basically give us surplus. They give us buffer or cushion, if you will. And not every state can say that.
That's right. And they've kind of, you know, not to jinx us, but proration proofed us. And that was, you know, when I started in Alabama politics, that was not the case. Proration
yeah.
was every 2 or 3 years. They've done a good job of being conservative and putting money away. But you know, we'll see what happens in a Trump economy instead of a Biden economy. I mean, Lord willing, you know, and the extra dose or doses of freedom, you know, actually generate some economic development. And so, you know, we need to just make sure that we have systems in place to where we're returning the money to the people or not taking it from them in the first place.
I totally agree. Well, hey, listen, let me ask you this with about 5 minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every year there's usually some signature piece or pieces of legislation. And then there's always the ones, too, that people don't realize how much time is spent in Montgomery beating bad legislation.
Right.
So So what do you see on the pro and the con list coming up that you guys at the Policy Institute are keyed in on?
Yeah, so the things that we're working really hard on, like I said, are kind of the taxing and spending issues. You know, we championed that overtime tax cut. That's something that President Trump has proposed on a nationwide basis.
Yeah.
We'd like to see that and a more broad corporate or both income tax cut or movement toward that. Occupational licensing is always on our list, as you know, and
yes.
I think that we're getting really close to making a breakthrough on that. And we're really looking, especially with all the information that we're getting from the public on this ALDOGE initiative that we're doing, we're really looking toward creating increased transparency on federal grant programs, federal money, and also state grant and state programs, just making sure that there's accountability in place and transparency in place for every single dollar that's spent of the taxpayers' money. And then, there are other things that, smaller issues, but also important issues like mandating a live streaming open meetings. I think that, technology has increased the public's ability to be part of the things that are going on in Montgomery. Some people like that. Some people don't like that. But I do think that that's something that could be really beneficial for the people to actually know what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's huge, and I think you're right, and I think that the more people see what's there, like when I first got elected, there was no way for the public to watch or listen to the machinations on the Senate floor. We put a camera and audio in for the first time, and my wife used to text me and tell me to smile more when I was at the podium because she was watching it.
Exactly.
But what it did though was it opened up transparency, and that kind of thing you can't get enough of that in government.
That's right. Yeah, when I first started, which is aging me, but when I first started, you had to be in a state building. So you had to be in the state capitol or in the state house, and it's basically like a old school, grandma's house intercom system. And you could listen in to one chamber or one specific room or another. But, technology, there are a lot of negative things about technology. We're working on a bill to help protect kids from online predators and online things that they shouldn't be seeing, but technology is also good that it adds that level of transparency, and so we think that state government should adhere to that as well.
All right, so what bill do you want to kill this year? Like, are they talking about gambling again? What are we going to do? And what do you see out there that the Policy Institute's going? Got to stop that one.
Yeah, I mean the two big things that I think that will be at least discussed are Medicaid expansion and gambling. And we're, obviously against both of those, have been for decades.
Yep.
Yes, there's some talk about gambling. There's not as much talk about gambling this year as there was last year. But I also know where we are in the quadrennium. And so we're working full bore on that and really trying to get information out to legislators, lawmakers, and just the general public on the dangers of specifically digital betting and sports betting.
Yeah.
Because much like the other issues we're talking about with those transparency issues and even the protection of kids, gambling has changed with the technology. And so if you pass one type of bill, you might get digital betting. If you pass another type of bill, you might accidentally get sports betting on everybody's phones or devices. And so that type of betting is highly addictive and really dangerous, especially for adolescent boys. And so we're trying to get that data and information into the hands of lawmakers.
I think that's huge. And I saw there was actually, I've forgotten which show it was now, maybe Chicago PD or something, one of the shows that that highlights criminal activity. And it had it had this entire scenario where these three dads were all about the sports betting, and they even had their own podcast about it, and they were all in. Mm-hmm. And then they were trying to sue somebody for putting extra charges on their account that they say they didn't do, and it turns out it was their kids at home.
Oh, wow.
Who were just doing what dad did. And it totally changed the whole dynamic of their conversation when they realized that, our kids got our passcodes and began gambling at the age of 11.
And unfortunately, those shows, are a reflection of real life.
Yeah.
That stuff is happening, and it's pretty difficult to wake up and see that you created that kind of problem. So we're trying to keep that out of Alabama. We know that people are doing it illegally. But for the state to condone and encourage it is something completely different than, you know, something happened illegally behind closed doors.
Is the What Is a Woman Act going to pass this year? Is that in line?
Yes, it is.
Yes, I think it is.
I believe it will pass. I believe it's a priority in the House. Obviously, Susan DuBose has done a great job working on that for the last. This will be her third year working on it, and our third year of helping her work on it.
Yep.
So, I think that bill will pass. Unfortunately, it's necessary. It's absolute silliness that it's necessary, but here we are, so we're going to make sure that we protect women and girls.
And I'll be honest with
statute.
You. I'll be honest with you. Shame on them for taking 3 years to get it passed. My gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson getting confirmed, and she can't name what a woman is, that should tell you the Supreme Court's heading down roads that we need to clarify at the state level. But
that's right. And really what that bill does is just clarifies the literal definition of man, woman, boy, girl, mother, father. And it just makes sure that, you know, those definitions are what have been used for over 2,000 years instead of what has been developed over the last just handful of years. So, she's done a fantastic job with that. But my sense is that bill moves quickly.
Well, my friend, you've done a fantastic job with the Policy Institute. And I'm going to probably call you later on because I got some DOGE ideas that I'm going to share with you.
But, oh, good. I know you do. That's awesome.
But in the meantime, tell folks where they can find out more about what y'all are doing.
Yeah, you can find us on all the social media outlets at Alabama Policy. And then also our website is alabamapolicy.org.
All right. Stephanie Smith, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you. All right, we're taking a break. I ran long because it was just, I mean, we could have talked for another half hour. But, the Alabama Policy Institute, if you want to do a deep dive on what's happening in your state capital, Alabama Policy for Alabama, Beacon Center for Tennessee, check them out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about from Huntsville over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden. I'm talking about big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in, just for good measure. I'm going to finish this section up, and then I got a bunch of text messages. And don't forget, coming up top of the hour, we will have the latest round of the Grand Council with my brethren Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. I got to remind you guys also, the latest edition of the Right Philosophy podcast came out today. Am I correct? It came out today?
Yep.
It did. The Right Philosophy podcast. That one's mine. I filmed that at my house, in my study at home. The quality, I'm just so pleased with it. But that's a chance for me to do things sort of like what I do with my monologue that you hear at the beginning of the show, but I can expand on it, spend more time and talk about things in great detail. So yeah, the Right Philosophy podcast is just one part of what Right Side Media, the parent company here, puts together. So if you're not familiar, Right Side Media is the company. Right Side Radio that we're on right now is only one of our productions. And then we have multiple podcasts with generated by different contributors, me being one. That's the Right Philosophy. Birdman, that one's called Right Click. It's all about tech and gaming with conservative stuff thrown into it. And then there's the Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. And then there's the Controversial Mom with Emily Jones, who founded Moms for Liberty in Madison County. And they're all just, I mean, listen, it's just fun, man. And then we have a whole bunch of stuff, all the writings that get published because of what we do that are published in newspapers all around the region. All I'm saying is this. We got a lot going on. Check them out. You can find out all our stuff on rightsidemedia.org. And you can follow us on YouTube. And, yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, y'all go check out the Right Side Media Twitter page as well. We're trying to put more of an emphasis on streaming, you know, events like the confirmation hearings and such. So, go check it out.
And I'm hoping we're going to have that Facebook page back that we were locked out of for the longest time. But
it's putting up a fight.
It's putting up a fight, but we're going to get it back. All right, finishing up home fries here. Cook me up some home fries. Give me a batch of home fries. You ready? Thank you. Cook them up. So Alabama's Attorney General Steve Marshall. By the way, Alabama and Tennessee both have attorney generals that have been kicking it. Steve Marshall, he came out against Costco. I did not see this coming, except that Costco apparently is super liberal. Now we're finding out. I mean, go figure. They're all about capitalism and marketing and, you know, and free market. But they really, really, really want their DEI.
I was always more of a Sam's person. Until I find out they're woke too.
Oh God. Well, at least Walmart has backed off of their DEI stuff, right?
So is Target, yeah.
Yeah. So on Monday, Attorney General Steve Marshall's story on 1819 News again came out yesterday afternoon. Steve Marshall and 18 other state attorneys general called on Costco to end their DEI policies. So, yeah, this is the thing, man. You've got the Supreme Court ruling against DEI. You've got the federal government working against DEI. And then you got Costco saying, we want more DEI. Okay. So we have the attorney general saying, inexplicably, Costco has doubled down on DEI. Last month, Costco's board of directors unanimously recommended that shareholders vote against a proposal that would require them to report on the financial risks that they incur by having DEI policies. Meaning, the board of directors is like, hey, shh, it may cost us money, but don't tell the shareholders. Well, that's why the attorneys general are involved. Because if you have shareholders in a company that is doing things that hurt those shareholders, if you have board of directors that is hurting their own shareholders, the attorney general has a right to say, you know what? That's bad form, and we can't let you hurt our people. And so what you got right now is Costco's board of directors literally saying, yeah, sorry for your luck, but we're going to keep on doing DEI, but shh, don't tell anybody. Don't make us have to report whether it costs money.
That sounds illegal.
Well, that's why the attorney general's involved. Thank you very much. By the way, did you see Al Sharpton?
Yeah.
Race baiter and charlatan extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. He's like King Charlatan. So he staged he called it a buy-in. Had a big old buy-in. Took a whole bunch of folks from his National Action Network to the Harlem Costco, and they marched through there looking like they had something going on. Every one of them had a $25 gift certificate, went in there to buy something in support of Costco, because Costco is all about DEI. And why that's a Al Sharpton thing, that should tell you everything you want to know about DEI.
Well, if any liberals are going to boycott companies leaving DEI, they're going to good luck finding anywhere else to shop. Because I feel like almost all of them are. Costco is kind of an exception. I feel like a lot of them are going back on it, like Target and Walmart and such. So, yeah, if you want to go on that strike, then good luck finding places to shop.
I'll just be buying my outdoors stuff at Tractor Supply now that they've recanted their position. It's nuts. And listen, this is falling by the wayside. It's crumbling. DEI and ESG, the environmental social governance stuff, and CRT, the critical race theory, all of that crap has begun to collapse under its own weight. Because it sounds really neat in theory, and when the liberals press you for it, you've got to have more of it. And then you realize you can't make a profit when you do it. It's kind of hard to maintain a company in the private sector. In the government, they can do DEI all they want to and just take the taxpayer dollar and keep paying for it. But in the private sector, you got to actually cut a payroll. You got to show a profit for your shareholders, or you lose your job.
Capitalism always wins.
Capitalism will correct the market every time if we let it. All you got to do is get out of the way. And by the way, I say that. That's why. See, now I'm going on a roll here. That's why what happened with electric vehicles has been such a debacle. Mm-hmm. Because it was the government trying to pick the winners and losers.
Yeah.
It wasn't the government letting the free market do its thing. It was literally the government saying, you will make a product like this. And the manufacturers were like, okay, but is anybody going to buy it? That's not our concern. Okay. Now we're losing money. Well, it's too bad for your luck. It's very important. No, it's too bad for your luck. We're going to self-correct. And they did.
If the market got to a place where EVs outcompete, everybody else, then so be it. But, like you said, it's like the government knows best crowd. It's not true.
Can you imagine, this is my analogy of why EV mandates from the Biden administration were so awful. Can you imagine if 25 years ago someone said, everyone will have a smartphone and you will have it by next year? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have had them. They wouldn't work. So the whole cellular phone, if you look at the growth of the cellular phone, it is exactly what the free market is designed to do. It started off as a big old bag that you carried and you plugged into your car and you had to have a separate antenna for it. And some people had it and it was neat and it would work only in certain towns. And then it kind of got a little bit bigger, and people realized that you could have cell service, but you had to buy certain packages, and that's all you could do was call, but you only turned your phone on when you had to use it. Otherwise, you were, quote-unquote, burning your minutes. And then the plans got a little more complete as the spread of cell phone coverage got bigger, and then there were competing companies, each having different packages, and then all of a sudden, manufacturers are like, hey, have you ever tried texting? What's texting? And then all of a sudden, everybody's texting. Well, now texting is a whole new thing. Can we send pictures? But you want to send pictures? Let us work on that. And then next thing you know, they got internet access and they quit doing flip phones you can keep in your pocket. Now you got this little brick with a TV screen on it, but it does more stuff than the people who went to the moon had in their lunar lander. And it all took about 25 years to come together, but it was the constant build the better mousetrap. And the government was not in the way except to make sure they didn't cheat people. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. And next thing you know, the industry did what the industry does. And we're going to one day have something that we like just, you know, pop up with a hologram in our hand or something, and it's going to be cool. But right now, this is the top of the line. And it wouldn't have been there if the government had gotten in the way and told the manufacturers what to do. And that's what they did with EVs.
Yeah.
How did we get on that?
I don't know. It was a good rabbit hole, you know. I'm not one of those EV haters either. I think the Teslas are awesome.
Oh,
they're sick. You know, I have a friend whose dad is big into Tesla, and I asked him the other day. I was like, "When's your dad gonna buy a Cybertruck? I want to ride one of those." You know, I think they're cool, but like you said, it's just the government, you know, mandating is the issue.
And I think, truthfully, if you want one, go get one.
Yeah.
Just understand that I don't want to pay for your charging station.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I'm not ready to have one yet. I am not convinced that they are where I need to be for the travels that I want to have. But I'm also of the firm belief that if you want it, let's do an all of the above. And the market will drive people that want it to it, and it'll build what they need, and they won't have these surplus lots full of cars they can't sell. And right now, like Ford posted a $5 billion loss.
Yeah.
Just unreal. Make a whole video out of this discussion we just had today, brother.
Oh, that was good.
All right, let's do it. All right, tell you what, I got one more thing here just so you know in terms of what's happening in home fries. Alabama's Senator Katie Britt had a major coup, and good on her. It was for all the right reasons. This was not one of those things where she just, like, got her way, and, well, I guess she got her way. No, this is the Lake and Riley Act. Trump just signed it. We watched as Senator Katie Britt, who's been on the show multiple times, sat right here in the studio with us, was there for Trump signing the Lake and Riley Act. The very first piece of legislation he signed came out of Alabama's U.S. Senator Katie Britt's efforts to get a piece of legislation passed that will help secure the border and make it something that makes families more secure, because criminal illegal aliens will be detained, period. Period, and deported, period. And, oh, by the way, they even made it where the states can sue the federal government related to immigration issues if the federal government is not enforcing the law. It's a whole new day, y'all. But the Lake and Riley Act just passed. Thank you, Senator Brett, for your effort on that. And, and thank you, President Trump, for signing it with Lake and Riley's family there present when he did.
Yeah, Katie Britt's been killing it.
She has. There.
And I know there's still people who think she's a rhino, which I find funny.
I
but,
do, too.
You know, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, she worked for Senator Shelby. Okay. You know what? There's a lot of Army officers that work for Milley that are warriors. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to explain that. But I will say that there has been nothing yet. And I'll call it when I see it.
Yeah, I will too. I'll be the first one.
As soon as she screws up, I'll go, why'd she do that?
But so far, she's been she's been one of the most productive senators up there, not even just on the Republican side, and she's from Alabama, so.
Yeah, like that. All right, I got a bunch of text messages. First, I'm going to take a break. I'll come right back, and I'll get caught up on text, because you guys are some texting machines. Text me. Tell me what you got. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back.